All right, Shabbos, good morning. Today's daf is Nun Tes 59. We are going to pick up from the two dots on Nun Ches Amud Beis 58b.
So we have extra Gemaras if you want, or is this like abandoned? It's beautiful.
No, I don't. Okay. Now you have to share. Now you have to share. We're supposed to say two dots, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. V'hamosari meir omer hekdesh. So remember again, we'll say the Mishnah had a discussion that if a man sanctifies his wife's earnings, so the shaila is, what is the status of that sanctification? So remember again, the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir said that it's kodesh. Rabbi Meir said that the sanctification works. And Rabbi Yochanan Hassanlu said that it's chulin. The sanctification does not work. So remember, again, there was another opinion, quoting the Gemara before, that the Rabbi Meir said that the mosar, any additional amounts, meaning above and beyond what she needs for her basic support, that amount is sanctified. So the Gemara says, emas kadosh, so when does this additional amount actually become sanctified? So the Gemara says, Rav Shmuel and Tarvai, Rav Shmuel both say, that ultimately, again, the additional amounts become kadosh after she dies, meaning when he inherits her, that's when those monies become sanctified. So the Gemara says, Rav Adbar Ava, Amar Moser Mechaim Kadosh. Rav Adbar Ava said, no, the additional amounts become kadosh even while she's still alive, meaning that he retains the rights over the... Remember, again, just to reiterate, there are two different amounts we're talking about. There is the basic amount, well, we'll call her Ma'asei Yadayim, her general earnings. And remember, again, under normal circumstances, if he's providing her with food, if he's providing with mizonos, he's taking care of her. So then Chazal awarded him her earnings. In addition to giving her earnings, so a husband gives his wife what the Gemara calls Ma'akesef. So Ma'akesef means money for her expenses, meaning giving her food, of course, is not enough. There are still other expenses that a woman has. And therefore, the Ma'akesef is there to go ahead and take care of other expenses. For that, Chazal gave him Mosar, any additional monies that she earned. So those are the two levels of earnings that we are concerning ourselves with over here. So now in this case over here, the husband sanctified her Mosar, her additional amounts, her additional monies that she earns above and beyond what is necessary for her support. So the Shaila is, at what point in time does that sanctification go into effect? So Rav and Shmuel both say it only goes into effect when she dies and he inherits her. Rav Adbar Ava says, no, it's even sanctified while she's alive. So Rav Papa wondered about this, and he tried to understand, B'mai, what's the case here? If he says, talking about a case where he is providing her with food, and he's also giving her the spending money, the ma'akesef, litzracha, for her needs, my time, demadar lacha, misa, kadosh. Then again, at that point in time, if he's providing her with everything, then he is, in fact, entitled to receive these monies. If he's entitled to receive these monies, then why does the sanctification only take effect after she dies? The Ella, kishen ma'alam zonos, v'lo ma'alam ma'akesef, litzracha, rather must be talking about a case where he's not supporting her, and he's not giving her the additional spending money she needs. In that case, again, I've also remember, that's the case of where she gets to keep her earnings, and he does not have to support her. If that's the case, then my time on demand, amar mechayim kadosh. If that's the case, then why would those monies become sanctified while she's still alive, meaning those monies are hers? To which the Gemara says, no, the olam b'ma'al l'mazonos. In reality, what's the case? He is supporting her. Ve'ino ma'al l'ma'akesef. So we'll say he's giving her mazonos, but he's not giving her the additional spending money. So we'll say, so let's play this out. If he's giving her mazonos, what is he entitled to? What is he entitled to? Her ma'asei yadayim, her money. But if he's not giving her the additional spending money, the ma'akesef, then what is he not entitled to? Then he's not entitled to the mosar, to the additional amounts that she generates. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, Rav Shmuel Savri, so Rav Shmuel both say, Tapav Nuntas, Tiknu Mezonos, Tachas Ma'asei Yadeha. That really what happened is that the rabbis awarded the husband the earnings of the woman. But in order to make it fair, they said that he must provide her with Mezonos, Ma'akesef, and they gave her the Ma'akesef, they gave him the Ma'akesef, Tachas Mosar, They give her the Ma'akesef, Tachas Mosar, because he would give her the earnings. Ma'akesef, and they obligated him to give her this additional amount of money. Tachas Mosar, ultimately because she is giving her additional earnings to him. And therefore, because he is not giving her additional spending monies, therefore, Mosar Didei. Therefore, again, the additional amounts belong to her. And because they belong to her, his sanctification will not take effect during her lifetime, but it will only take effect when? When? When she dies and he inherits her. Because once she dies and he inherits her, then ultimately that becomes his money. Once it becomes his money, he can do with it as he wants. So Havi Rav Ada, excuse me, Rav Ada bar Ava sub, Rav Ada bar Ava on the other hand holds, Tiknu Mizonos Tachas Mosar. No, Chazal instituted Mizonos Tachas Mosar, meaning again, that Lamaisa, the reason she gets Mizonos is because she has to go ahead and give the additional earnings to the husband. Uma'a Kesef Tachas Ma'asei Adeha. And she gets the ma'akasef because she must give her earnings to her husband. The chayvan, so it's a fundamental machlokes now about how Chazal awarded different things. The chayvan de kayohev le mezone, and once he gives her mezonos, mosar didei havi, then ultimately the additional amount that she generates belongs to him, and because it belongs to him, it becomes hektish even during her lifetime. So, what are they arguing about? So, one opinion says that we link that which is common with that which is common on the Zerbosai. So, meaning, remember, we have two different versions now as to how Chazal allocated these different entitlements. So, according to the first version, so Chazal said that because he gives her mizonos, she gives him ma'asei adayim. And because again he gives her ma'akasa spending money, she gives him mosar. She gives him any additional earnings. According to the second version, because he gives her mizonos, she gives him the additional earnings. And because he gives her ma'akasef, she gives him ma'asei adayim, her earnings. So they switch it around, meaning so everyone's agreeing at the end of the day that he's obligated to go ahead and give her. He's obligated to give her mizonos, and he's obligated to give her the spending money. And everyone agrees that as a result, he will get her earnings plus any additional amounts that she generates. The shaila is, how do we line up each one? Is it mizonos, ma'asei adayim, ma'akasef, mosar? Or is it mosar, mizonos, ma'asei adayim, ma'akasef? Now you'll see what actually makes a difference. Mar savar, midi d'shriach. So one says that we go out and we line up that which is common with that which is common. So that's the argument for saying that Ma'asei Adayim and Mizonos line up with each other. That because he gives her Mizonos, she gives him her earnings. Because Mizonos is Shriach, so to speak, it's common. And the fact that a woman earns money, that's also common. That's a common thing as well. Umar Savra Midi Dikais Midi Dikais. On the other hand, others say no, that Lamaisa, we line up those things that have defined amounts. So we'll say, we will see that if a woman is being supported by her husband, Chazal said that there's a certain basic amount of money that she is obligated to generate. We'll discuss how much that is. So because that is a defined amount, therefore again, that lines up with the ma'akesef, which is also a defined amount. Remember, as opposed to mizonos, which is undefined, ma'akesef itself is defined. Okay. 100%, meaning correct. This is not like only a quid pro quo. If she can't earn for whatever the reason, then Lemaisa, again, he still has to provide for her. This is saying if she's capable of earning, and we'll take it even a step further, there are cases, again, where he will exempt her from earning, right? Let's say he says, it's okay, you don't have to work. But if she can't, of course, he's obligated to still support her. So the Gemara says, Mesa, the Gemara is the Kasha, Tiknu Mizonos Tachas Ma'asei Adeha. So remember, here the Braisa says that the rabbis gave her Mizonos. The rabbis gave her mizonos because of her earnings, which also makes it sound like because she's giving her earnings to her husband, therefore she gets mizonos. So now this works well for one opinion that says mizonos and ma'asei adayim line up with each other, but does not work well for the opinion that says that mizonos and mosar line up with each other. So which the Gemara says, you could reframe the braisa. Ema tachas mosar ma'asei adayim. Say that it was instituted to correspond to the additional amounts that she earns. Tashma, another braisa, im einon osin la ma'akesef letzar chaha, if he does not give her additional monies for her needs, ma'asei adeha shela, her earnings belong to her. So according to this braisa, ma'asei adayim corresponds to the ma'akesef, Ema mosar ma'aseya dehashala. Oh, you can stay and say that what? No, her additional earnings belong to her. In which case, again, the brisa would mean that the additional earnings that she or the additional earnings correspond to the ma'akesef that he gives to her. V'ha alakatani mahi osalo. Aye, but again, in that brisa it says that what is a woman obligated to go ahead and produce? What is she obligated to produce for the household? Mishkal chamesh sloim shasi biyehuda. She's obligated to go ahead and produce the weight of 5 sloim of warp thread in Yehuda. You also remember again when you're on a loom, so you have the warp and the woof, right? Two different types of. I dabble. Right. So the idea over here is so. That's right. So the warp is a little bit more complicated than the woof. So therefore, again, just like saying it, woof, woof. All right. So the idea over here is that this is the amount that she's obligated to produce. The weight of 5 sloim. This is a weight measure. The 5 sloim of warp wood in of warp wool. Of warp thread in Yehuda. Hachi kamar, this is what it means to say, ma'aseh adaya kama havi, how much earnings does she have to produce? Delayed the mosar dida kama. So also, remember, again, the only way to calculate mosar is to first know what? Is to first know how much is called regular ma'aseh adayim. And how much is that? Mishkal chamish slime shasi b'Yehuda, shein eser slime b'Galil, which is the equivalent of 10 slime in the Galil. Amar Shmuel, so Shmuel said, halacha. So we'll say, I want to be clear. The only thing we're getting out of that sugya is we're just trying to figure out, you know, what entitlement corresponds to what obligation. In other words, that we know that a husband is obligated to provide. Let's just go back. A husband is obligated to provide his wife for two things. I mean, more than two things, but in this context, two things: mizonos, basic sustenance, and spending money. So that's what we know, and we also know that as a result, Chazal awarded him her earnings. Her earnings, ma'aseh adayim, that's what we call her earnings, and moser. Now, her earnings represent the amount that are necessary to support her, herself, and moser means additional amounts of money. And so we know that now he's obligated to provide her with two things, and we know as a result, Chazal awarded him with two things that she earns, her basic earnings and her additional earnings. Just the fundamental question is, which award lines up with which particular entitlement? And the Gemara is just pointing out over here that is not an academic question that actually has lemaisa ramifications. Some are Shmuel, so Shmuel said, halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler. The halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler. Also remember, what did Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler say? So if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi says, Amar Shmuel, Alma kishigigesh, no. Am I reading the right Rashi? I'm sorry. Okay, forget it. Not Rashi yet. No, I'm Shmuel Halacha. I'm saying right. Alma l'chishe igarshena chal hanedra. Alma amdo makdish davar shalom ali olam sha'adayin lo gish. So Shmuel said, Halacha was Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, who said in yesterday's daf, that a person has the ability to be makdish a davar shalom ali olam. That a person has the ability to go ahead and sanctify something that has not yet come into existence. Umi Amar Shmuel. You're supposed to remember again, this was the case that we had yesterday, where a person ultimately again is makdish the earnings of his wife. So now again, Shmuel says that the halacha was Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler, and therefore it's very important. A person could sanctify something that has not yet come into this world. So Gemara says, did Shmuel really say this? V'hatna, we learned. Koneim Shani Osir Laficha. If a woman says that Koneim Shani Osir Laficha. I will say now, in this case, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Konim shani osa l'ficha, ma shani osa yihi akonim l'ficha, yihi alecha kehektish medechonasin. So a woman says to her husband that essentially, I'm imposing a konam vow on you. They both say a konam is like a quasi-hektish vow. So when a woman says, everything I do is konam to you, she is prohibiting her husband from getting any benefit from anything that she generates. Anything that she generates. So again, if you look at that Rashi once more, konam shani osa l'ficha, ma shani osa, whatever I do, yet konam l'ficha, literally should be off limits to yehe alecha kehekdish melechanoslo. So anything I do, anything I generate, is usher to you like it was consecrated, like it was sanctified. So what's that halacha? Rabbi Kiva says, Yafir, shematan difalav, Yes, I mean, I really though. So Rabbi Akiva says, husband should annul the vow. Why, Rabosai? Because even though the vow itself is inconsequential for her ma'asei adayim, because Rabosai, remember again, now the novelty, now the impact of this is the following. Let's say this husband is supporting his wife. If he's supporting her, then what does that mean? That he is entitled to her earnings. Meanwhile, she just made a vow saying that what? You cannot get benefits from any of my earnings. My earnings are off limits to you. They're like hekdish to you. So Rabbi Akiva says, look, for the regular mazonos, for regular earnings, that vow is inconsequential. Why? Because it was that you can't make a vow that prohibits someone from getting something that they are otherwise entitled to. So therefore, again, her vow does not impact her husband's ability to still get her masna and her earnings, because that's an entitlement that is owed to him. But Rabbi Akiva says husband should still annul the vow, because you know what? It might not work for the earnings, but you know what it will work for? The mosar, the additional amounts. And if the husband wants to get the additional amounts, he should go ahead and annul the vow. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, Yafer, no, you should annul the vow. Why? Shema yigar shenu utehe asur lachsar. What is interesting? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, you're right, the vow doesn't take effect now. But you know when the vow will take effect? If he divorces her, and they're no longer married, which means now he has no longer any entitlement to her earnings, then the vow will take effect, which will then mean that she will be prohibited, he will be prohibited to benefit from anything that is hers, which the ma'aseh would then what? Preclude him from potentially remarrying her after divorce. So again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri agrees the neder does, or the koinam does not take effect during marriage, but it will take effect after they get if they get divorced, and would preclude him from remarrying her. V'amar Shmuel, and Shmuel said, Halacha Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and Shmuel said that the halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So Rabbi says, therefore, you see what? You see that lemaisa. I'm sorry, Rabbi, I said it wrong before. Rabbi Yochanan Hasandler is the one who says that ein adam makdish davar shabali olam, that a person cannot sanctify something that is not yet in existence. Here you have Shmuel saying the halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri clearly holds that what? That a person can sanctify something that is not yet in existence. So it's a contradiction in Shmuel. So both remember again, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is saying, if she takes this konam vow now, so the ma'aseh, again, it won't have an impact presently when they're married, but when she gets divorced, if she gets divorced, it will have an impact, and it will be chal then. So you see, a person can be makdish something, can sanctify something that is not yet in existence. So Shmuel is contradicting himself. To which the Gemara says, "Kemer Shmuel halach Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri." When Shmuel says halach fazer Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that's the hadafa. That's what's referring to. What? That's referring to any additional amounts. If you look at Rashi, "Amo shalach Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri la hadafa ka'amar kilomar halacha diyefar velo mitame." So the halacha is that you should go ahead and you should annul the vow, but for a different reason. Either Rabbi Yochanan ikra masi adat tzarech hafara. So therefore Shmuel says that the halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, but legabe the hadafa only regarding the additional amounts. So why don't you say that? Shmuel, why don't you explicitly say that the halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri for the additional amounts? Inami, in halacha kitanakama, or say the halacha does follow tanakama, or inami, halacha Rabbi Akiva, say the halacha follows Rabbi Akiva. In other words, be more explicit in your ruling. Elo, Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, no. Konamos kamrit, you're dealing over here with the case of konamos, a konam vow. However, remember, if you recognize that word, if you remember again, we say this in Hataras Nedarim, right? We speak about konamos that we made. So remember again, a konam is like a personal hektish vow. Under normal circumstances, if I go ahead and I say this gemara is hektish, so we'll say it's hektish for everybody. There's no such thing as relative hektish. Either it's consecrated or it's not consecrated. A konam vow imposes a level of consecration upon one individual or a group, but not everyone. So the Gemara says, you're bringing up a case of konamos. Konamos are different. Shiny konamos, shemitok mitok sha'adam oser peros chaveiro alav, since a person could go ahead and aser his peros on someone else. So we'll say, since I could run in the konam vow, I could take my fruit and I could say, Ruvain, you can't eat my fruit. They're a konam unto you. They're kodesh. You may not partake of them. Therefore, again, adam makdish davar shelo bali olam. Suppose the same way that a konam vow allows me to do certain things that you can't normally do, like make something hektish to one person and not to everyone, so too a person could also go ahead and be makdish and consecrate something that has not yet come into existence. Amar le Abayis. Abayis is bishlama adam oser peros chaveiro alav. I understand why a person could go ahead and aser his peros on his friend. Shekein, Adam Oseh Peiros of Al Chavero. Yes, because again, a person has the ability to aser his peiros right on his friend. So I understand why my friend could go ahead and aser his peiros on me. I can aser my peiros on him. Yes, our davar shalab al yolam al chavero. Shekin, how can you go from that to say that a person could therefore go ahead and aser something that has not yet come into existence? Shekin adam oser peiros chavero al chavero. Because let's remember, a konam vow does have limitations. After all, what can't I do? I can't make a konam vow on your produce, prohibiting you from getting benefit from your produce. Can you imagine that? I walk over to your orchard, and I say, I hereby declare that your orchard, right, Reuven's orchard, I hereby declare it konam to Reuven. Right, Reuven, you may not go and get benefit from. Obviously, I can't do that. So what the Gemara is pointing out over here is that obviously konam vow, as powerful as it is, has limitations. So the same way that I can't prohibit my friend's produce on my friend, so too what? Perhaps I also can't go ahead and prohibit something that is not yet in existence. Oh, we'll say, what's the case over here? The case over here is where the woman goes ahead and she sanctifies her hands. She consecrates her hands, and she says, these hands should be consecrated ultimately to those who made them. Which Rabbi say, now, what's the effect of that? The effect of that is that anything that she generates with those hands, i.e. earnings, will what? Will ultimately, again, be Kodesh. Rabbi say, now, here's the chap. What's the chap of saying that, as opposed to saying my earnings will be Kodesh? The Gemara says, because the Adayim is Nehu Ba'olam. So Rabbi say, the whole issue of consecrating future earnings is you are consecrating something that is not yet in existence, which is a subject of great dispute. In general, we'll say this is not just a din you should know in Hekdesh. We'll see this in Baba Kama as well. It's a major din also in business. Can you transact business with things that do not yet exist? Can I sell you rights? Can I sell you rights? Let's say I have a palm tree, and that palm tree is going to go ahead and sprout dates. Can I sell you those dates? Can I legally sell you those dates before they come into existence or not? That's called about a davar shel ba'olam. That's a fundamental question. So it's the same thing over here. So we're saying, now we're reframing it. She's not consecrating future earnings. What she's consecrating is her hands. And she's saying whatever these hands earn, ultimately that will be hekdesh. Oh, that's a different case. The hands are now a davar shel ba'olam. They are in existence, therefore they can be consecrated. It's the Gemara says, v'chi ka'amris ha'chi mi mekatsha. So we'll say, one second. So now let's play this for her. Now she consecrates her hands. Does such a consecration actually take effect? Ha-mishabdalei. But I both say, he already has, so to speak, a shibud. He has a lien on those hands. Now, what does that mean? So I both say, remember, okay, like I said, be careful how you use this, right? But the idea over here is, what it's saying is, he already has an entitlement to her earnings. So his entitlement precedes her consecration. So her consecration, by definition, undermines his entitlement. Who says you could do that? You can't do that. Why would her consecration even be valid? To which the Gemara says, no, the Amar Lechi Megarsha. What she says is she's not saying that the consecration should be valid now. What she's saying is that the consecration would be valid in the event that they divorce. But 1 second, is there ever such a case like this where you're making a consecration that will not be valid now but will be valid for a future date? Meaning, I will say, if it can't be valid now, I would venture to say that what? That it's not valid at all? Why not? Can't a person say to his friend, Sadazu Shani Mochelacha, this field that I'm selling you now, one day I'm going to repurchase it. When I repurchase it from you, tikdash, it should be sanctified. Milo kacha, does this not work? So you see from here what? That you can consecrate something that you're not consecrating now, but consecrating for a future date. No. Midam, you can't compare that case. Hasam biyado lekakdisha. So we'll say in that case over here, if I want to rebuy it from my friend, I could repurchase it right now if I wanted to. And therefore, technically speaking, it's within my right to go ahead and consecrate it. Hacha in biyado legarish esatzma. But here, Rabbi Yosef, she's making the future consecration of her earnings dependent on her potential divorce. It is not within her hands to get herself divorced. Halo Damira, this case is only comparable. Elala Omer Lechavero, Sadazu Shemacharti Lecha, this field that I sold to you, L'sheekachena Mimcha Tikdash, this field that I sold to you already. When I repurchase it from you, it shall be sanctified. And what's the halacha? Delo kadsha. It is not sanctified. I will say, why is it not sanctified? Because lemaisa, you can't be makdish something for the future that you can't be makdish at this point in time now. To maskeh Rapapa. So Papa says, 1 second, me dummy, how can you compare that case? Hasam gufo peiris piyada delo keach. I said, the difference is like this. In that case, the field is owned by your friend. So, of course, a future consecration of an item that is not in your possession, of course, will not work. Hacha, but in this case of here, where the woman is being makdish her hands, gufa biyadahu. Her, well, say, as much as the husband has entitlement to her earnings, he does not own her hands. Right? Her hands are hers. Halo damya, ela lo omer lechavera. This must be comparable to the following case. Sadazu, shemashkanti lecha. This field that I went ahead and I set aside as a mashkon, meaning it's collateralized property. When I redeem it from you, i.e. mean when I pay off the debt and take the collateral lien off the property, tikdash, it should be sanctified. And what's the halacha? The kadsha, such a sanctification works. So what do you see from here? This seems to be a case of where right now my consecration does not work, but lamaisa, because it will work at some future date, that tonight works. Maskev harav shishvedrav idi, so harav shishvedrav idi raised the kasha. Dami, how can you say this? How can you compare this case? Hasam biyado lifdosa. So I'll say there in the case of the mashkon of the collateral, it is in my ability to redeem it. Right? Meaning I will say because at any point in time I could, I don't know if this is the right term, but I could decollateralize. How do I decollateralize the property? How do you decollateralize something? Pay off the debt. Right? Meaning it's, remember, the collateral is only there in the event of default of the of payment. If I pay the money, then by definition it's decollateralized. I like that word. Decollateralized. Right, Mr. Schoenfeld, what are you doing? Good. Good. All right. So the Gemara says the following. Mask for Rav Shishbe Dravidi. I'm sorry. Hash midami hasam yalavdosa hacha in biadalagarish atzma. Baba said he can't compare it because again, remember, in the case of the collateral, he could always pay off the debt and take back his property. In the case of the Gerish, and she does not have the ability simply to divorce herself. Hala damya elala omer lechavero. This could only be compared to the following case. To a person who says to his friend, Sadezu shemashkanti lechala eser shanim, is this field that I gave you as collateral for 10 years. So we'll say, here you have a defined amount of time. L'chashefdena mimcha tikdash. When I go ahead and redeem it from you, it should be hektish. What's that locha? Dikadsha. Ultimately, such a sanctification works. So we'll say, you see from here what? That a future sanctification for of an item that you cannot currently sanctify does in fact work. Maskia for Ravashi. Ravashi raises a kasha. Me dummy, how can you compare this? Hasam la'aser shanem mihabiyada livdosa. We'll say, see, over there, even though in 10 years, for the next 10 years, it's not mine, but I do know that what? In 10 years from now, it will be mine. And as such, again, I know definitively that at some point I will come back to my property. When it comes to divorce, a woman never has that ability to go ahead and guarantee her divorce. To which the Gemara finally says, Ella, Amar Avash. So we'll say, so now, the problem, of course, is, so the way we tried to set up the case was a situation of where she was makdish her hands. She was makdish her hands. And the problem now that we've gotten into is we see that it's not so poshut. Because what we know now is that if she tries to sanctify her hands now, her sanctification cannot undermine the husband's pre-existing entitlement to her earnings. The shaila then is, can that sanctification work for some future date in the event that she would get divorced? So we see from everything we've seen, that's a machlokes. And that machlokes hinges on, can you sanctify something presently for which the present there is no present sanctification, but there will be future sanctification? And that seems to be the subject of a machlokes. To which the Gemara finally says, Ela Amar Rav Ashi, you know what? Let's go back. Konamos Kamrit. What are you dealing over here with? You're dealing with the case of Konam. Right? That's this whole case. We'll say where she's saying, Konam Masha Ani Osa Leficha. She's saying to the husband, anything I generate should be a Konam to you. Should be like personal hekdish to you, personal consecration to you, and therefore you shouldn't get benefit. So to which the Gemara says, Shiny Konamos. Ah, Konamos are different. Why are Konamos different? Dikidushas Haguf Ninhu. Sirva say, oh, here's the difference. You see, when you make something konam, konam endows the item with kedushas haguf. Now, Rabbi, remember again, when you sanctify something or consecrate something, there are two types of consecration. There's what's called kedushas haguf and kedushas damim. So kedushas damim means monetary value. So I could consecrate, if I consecrate my phone, so right, so the Beis HaMikdash doesn't need my phone, but you know what they would like? They would like the value. So that's called Kiddush Hazon. Obviously, I'm not going to give the phone to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm going to give the value of the phone to the Beis HaMikdash. But let's say if I go ahead and I consecrate a sheep, so we'll say in that case, that's what's called, that could be Kiddush HaSaguf. I'm actually going to go ahead and offer that up, meaning the body itself becomes consecrated. What Ravashi is suggesting is when you make something konam, that has Kiddush HaSaguf, that has physical sanctity. Oh, once that's physical sanctity, we'll say, watch this, Yochid Rava. The Amar Rava, Hekdish Chametz V'Shichrer Mafkien Midei Shibur. So the Gemara says, listen to this, we'll say. So now, oh, listen to this. When you make something hegdish, chametz, or shichrer, that takes away from shiur. So listen to this case. Let's say I borrowed money from Reuven, and I gave Reuven collateral. And I gave him a particular item of collateral. I will say, if I go ahead and I consecrate that collateral, sanctification, consecration, hegdish, is so powerful that what does it do? It removes the lien. It removes the collateral identity. Therefore, again, the Gemara suggests, and same thing, by the way, with chametz. I will say, now, what's this case? Let's say I borrow money from Reuven, and what do? I give him a bottle of, 250-year-old single malt scotch. Right, valued at
$75,000.
Right, that is right. More, good. So what happens? And I will say, so listen to this. So now Pesach comes. So I will say, what happens to that scotch? Scotch is not the present because scotch is chametz nukshe, but you get the point. Right? So what happens? Oh, now it's chametz. I will say, what happens to all chametz on Pesach? Here's the interesting part. Technically speaking, even if you don't sell your chametz on Pesach, technically, the Torah removes chametz from your possession on Pesach. Which means that if the Torah removes chametz on Pesach, so then what happens? That lien against that 250-year-old bottle of scotch is removed. That's what chametz does. It removes liens. And similarly, again, shichur. If I went ahead and I borrowed money from Reuven and I pledged my servant, this is my non-Jewish servant, as collateral, and then I emancipate that servant, what happens? Emancipation removes the lien. So consecrating an item, if it becomes chametz on Pesach, or it's chametz and Pesach comes, or emancipation, or remove the liens. Now, we don't really care about chametz right now. We'll care about it tomorrow, Mir Tzashem. We don't care really about emancipation right now, but what we do care about is hekdish. You see, when you consecrate something, that removes even a pre-existing lien. If that's the case, then when a woman says, my hands are konam to you, even though he has a pre-existing quote-unquote lien against those hands, the fact that she consecrates them and makes them hekdish removes his lien. To which the Gemara says, one second, well, if that's the case, v'nikdash mehashta. So we'll say, so why are you saying then that her earnings only become kodesh upon divorce, right? Why wouldn't they become kodesh even right now? If kodesh is so powerful that it undermines even a pre-existing lien, let them become kodesh now. Oh, because I will say, listen to this. The rabbis made an enactment, and the rabbis said that we do not let this Kodesh vow devolve upon her earnings until after the dissolution of the marriage in order to make the husband's claim strong. In other words, we both say that the rabbis felt they had to go ahead and insert themselves in this situation to prevent biblical law from setting in, proactively keep biblical law from setting, because we both say, because what's going to happen? You could definitely see how this is going to play out. How is this going to play out? Right? She's going to get angry at him for whatever the reason. I'm going to say, by the way, this goes both ways, right? The same reason that the rabbis instituted a ksuba. One of the reasons instituted a ksuba was why? Because if a husband gets angry at his wife and there's no, it doesn't hit him in the wallet. So what's going to happen? He's going to say, oh, forget it. What do I need this for? And I'll just walk away and divorce her. Ksuba makes him think twice. So what are we concerned about again? We're concerned she's going to get angry at him. She's going to say, you shmendrik. You know, I'm so tired of this already. And that's putting it nicely. Right? All right? I'm tired of this already. And therefore, again, my hands are hekdish to you. So first of all, that's certainly not a good thing to hear in Erev Yontif. Right? That's number one. Right? And also, because remember, it's not just earnings. It's everything. And also, again, it can have a financial impact. Therefore, in order to prevent that from happening, the rabbi strengthened his entitlement to the point that ultimately, again, biblical consecration cannot devolve upon her hands until in the event that the marriage itself is dissolved. So also what comes out is she can make the vow. Remember, so now the way we state is she cannot consecrate future earnings because that's a davar shel b'olam, that's not in existence. But she can consecrate her hands because her hands exist, but that vow, that konam, will not take effect until the marriage itself is dissolved, because again, during the marriage itself, his shibud, his entitlement, is strong enough to stave off the effect of that vow. Says the Mishnah. These are the jobs that a woman is obligated to do for her husband. It's good. I'm preparing you with good divrei Torah for Yontif, right? So these are the melachos, right? Although I will absolutely disavow any knowledge of this drasha that you're giving. I know. I have to go. Actually, we're gonna have to edit the recording. The elam melachos sheisha osa labayla. These are the obligations that a woman has to her husband. Tochenes, she has to grind the wheat. Ofa, she has to go ahead and bake. Omech. What are we doing over here, Mr. Schoenfeld? This looks like incriminating over here, right? And she's going ahead. She has to launder clothing. Mivashela, she has to cook. Menika as bina, she has to nurse their child. I was saying, by the way, nursing a child means that, let's say, again, she can't claim, I don't want a nurse, I want to hire a wet nurse. Right? So he could say, no, that's your responsibility to nurse. Matzas la'amita, she has to make his bed. Va'osa b'tzemer, she has to work with wool, meaning produce wool. We'll define what this means. So now, I'll say, listen to this. So these are all the obligations he has. But what happens if they have domestic help? Hechnisa lo shifcha acha. So I'll say, let's say she says, now here's what's interesting. Now, she can't compel him to say, I don't want to do this. You know, get a cleaning lady, get a housekeeper. But I'll say, so let's say, because he says, I don't have to do that. But let's say she has money. Right, she comes from a wealthy family, so she hires domestic help. So echnisa lo shifcha achas, if she hires one housekeeper, lo tochenes v'lo oflo mechabeses, then that frees her up. She doesn't have to go ahead. She doesn't have to grind the wheat. She doesn't have to bake, and she doesn't have to launder clothing. Shtayim, let's say she brings in two housekeepers. Ein mevashalas ve'im menika spina. She doesn't have to cook, and she doesn't have to nurse. Shalosh, if she brings in three housekeepers, she's got a staff. Ein matza'as lo hamita. She does not have to make his bed. Ve'ein osa b'tzemer, nor does she have to produce any wool. Arba, if she brings in four, this is like the end of the Seder, right? Arba, mi odeya, right? So what happens if she brings in four? This is funny. Yosheves bekatadra. She could sit back in her easy chair and do absolutely nothing, right? If she wants to put her feet up on the couch, she can also listen to this. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer says, afilu echnisa lo mea shvachos. No, not true. Even if she brings in 100 servants, Kofet lasos b'tzemer, he could still force her to work a little bit. Why? Shahabatala mevia lidezima. Because Rabosai, again, idle time brings people to morality. Rabosai, this is an amazing yisod in general, right? That we know, clinical tests have shown that people get into trouble when they have too much time on their hand. The greatest bracha you could have in life is to have absolutely no free time. Because if you have no free time, you will not get yourself into trouble. So Rabbi Eliezer says, even if she doesn't have to do any of the work, because she's got a staff, it's a good idea for a person never to be idle, because idleness ultimately brings one to immorality. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, af hamadir es ishto milasos melacha. Also, listen to this. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, even if a man makes a neder saying that his wife cannot do any work, he wants to take care of her. I don't want you lifting a finger. Yotzi v'yitin ksuva. He should divorce her and give her her ksuva. It was like quite extreme. We'll explain that. Shabbatala mevi'a lidei shimum. It was Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, because idleness leads one to insanity. Now, we'll have to see exactly. Now, both Rabbi Shimon Gamliel as well as Rabbi Eliezer seem to agree that idle time is not good, because ultimately, again, gets one into trouble. But it's interesting that Rabbi Eliezer says it leads to immorality, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it leads to insanity. So we'll have to see, by the way, is there like some kind of nafkamina in those two? In any event, the Gemara says, Tochenes takadaitcha. Now, I'll say, now the Gemara is intrigued by this. Really, a woman is supposed to work in a mill? She's supposed to grind wheat? They're supposed to understand, how do they grind wheat? So your mills, we know, were operated in one of two ways. Most mills were water mills, right? You can see it's still in Eretz Yisrael, right? There's a white by the big windmill, right? You can see how they have this. So in Yerushalayim, so you have water running down. You could also see it in Dutch Wonderland. That's the other place you can see it. Yerushalayim or Dutch Wonderland, they have it for the kids, right? So you could go ahead and you could see that, right? The water would come down on the mill and turn it. So what do you mean a woman has to work the mill? Well, say alternatively, they had animals that literally would be chained to the mill and go ahead. So is that mamish what we're saying over here? Tochenes, she has to. The Gemara says, no, Ella ema mitachenes. Mitachenes means she just has to oversee the grinding, meaning that she's responsible to make sure that the wheat gets, she doesn't have to do it herself, but that she whoever sees it. V'baisema, the other possibility is brechayim dida diade. Excuse me. They know some about a handmill, and she could grind some wheat with a handmill. Masizin l'olik Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi say our mishnah desire for the view of Rabbi Chiya, because Rabbi Chiya says tiny Rabbi Chiya ein ha'isha el liyofi. A woman is only for beauty. Meaning that I will say that the whole idea is that a man is supposed to take care of his wife, right? That a man is not supposed to work his wife hard, but rather, again, she's for beauty. Or a woman is for having children. In other words, that I will say the goal of the woman is not to be another hired hand in the household. I will say, by the way, the concept of Eina Isha El Liyofi is exceptionally important as well. What that means is that this idea that a wife saves her husband from committing many averos by ultimately, again, making sure that she's always beautiful for him, that he doesn't have a desire to look at anyone else, that he doesn't have a desire ultimately, again, to satisfy those basic carnal desires in other ways, but that ultimately, again, he finds her beautiful, he finds her attractive, and he finds their physical life fulfilling. Furthermore, V'tanei Rabbi Chiya, Ein Isha Ela Tachshite Isha. Rabbi Chiya says that a wife, is only to have someone to adorn. Right? It's actually very beautiful that the job of a husband is to adorn his wife with jewelry. The job of a husband is to take care of his wife. If a person wants to go ahead and take care of his wife, right, or make her look even more beautiful, should always make sure that she has the ability to dress in the finest linen garments. Take care of her. Make sure she has beautiful clothing. Someone will say, if a person wants to make sure that his daughter has a beautiful complexion, he should make sure to give her a steady diet of efrochim, of young chicks, and good milk, prior to reaching pirka. Pirka means puberty. So if he wants to make sure that she ultimately develops well, he should make sure she has this particular diet. Umeinika esbina. Someone says, go a little bit weiter. She has to go ahead and nurse the son. So our Mishnah seems to not reflect the Beshamai. Disanya nadra shol hanik esbina. If a woman took a neder that she's not going to nurse, Beshamai omrim shometes dad mipiv. She stops nursing. Ubeisil says no kol v'minikaso, that you go ahead and you force her to nurse. So also Beshamai seems to say that lamaisa, if she takes a neder not to nurse, she doesn't have to nurse. Beisil says no, she has to nurse. Niskarsha in a kofe. But if they divorced her, then what? He can't compel his ex-wife, who happens to be the mother of this child, to nurse. However, again, if the child already recognizes the mother, meaning he won't nurse from anyone else besides his mother, then he has to pay his ex-wife to divorce her, to nurse. Because at that point in time, when the child recognizes the mother, the child won't nurse from anyone else. It's a sakana if the mother does not nurse the child. So it sounds like, again, that the Mishnah does not affect the Beishamai, because Beishamai holds that apparently a woman can't be forced to nurse, that if she takes another not to nurse, husband can't compel her. But the Mishnah says one of the responsibilities she has is to nurse her child, which the Gemara says, no, feel to Beishamai. The Mishnah could even reflect the view of Beishamai. How so? Hacham asks, you know, what's the case here? Kigon shenadra, he v'kayim la. Rabbi says, she made a neder not to nurse, and he upheld the neder. V'kasavri Beishamai, who knows in etzva beishina? Beishamai says, literally, he put his finger between her teeth. In other words, the Rabbi says, he didn't have to uphold this neder. Had he not upheld the neder, then what? Then it would not have been valid, in which case she would have had to nurse. If he upholds the neder, then what? Then he bears responsibility for that. And Beis Hillel says that no, she went ahead and put her finger between her teeth, i.e. it's her fault, and therefore she's held responsible. So if that's the case, why do they have to argue in this case over here regarding nursing? Why don't they argue in any other case of ksuva, right? Let it be a case where she made a neder not to get benefits from him, and he upheld the neder, she made a neder prohibiting him from any benefit, and he upheld the neder. You could frame the machlokis in that case. Why does it have to be nursing? To which the Gemara says, va'od, beishamai omrim eina manika. Furthermore, Beishamai says explicitly that what? That she is not obligated to nurse. Ella, Mechavarta mas nisin de lo kivei sham. I rather, Rabbi, it appears clear that what? The Mishnah does not reflect the view of Beis Shammai. The Mishnah only reflects the view of Beis Hillel, because according to Beis Shammai, a wife, does not have an obligation to nurse her child. That is not one of the obligations that a wife has to her husband, whereas according to Beis Hillel, that is one of the obligations. Therefore, the Mishnah that says that it is an obligation for a mother to nurse follows the view of Beis Hillel and not the view of Beis Shammai. Will Amir Hashem continue tomorrow? Shkoyach.